Live from Utrecht, this is Bitcoin
Explained.
Hey, Sjors.
Hello.
Sjors, today we're going to cover another Ordinals-related topic. Not really, but I'm just giving you some context why I came up with this suggestion. The reason is, over the past couple of weeks, I got the same question multiple times. Once on a Twitter Spaces, and I think maybe once or twice also just in a private conversation. And the question is, why is the witness discount there in the first place? Because that's what ordinals are using. No, well, that's what inscriptions are using, I should say.
They're taking advantage of the fact that there is a witness discount, yeah.
Right. So I got the question, why is the discount even there? And that's the question we're going to answer in this episode. Isn't that right, Sjors?
That sounds like a great question. Let's answer that.
But first, everyone's favorite part of the episode... Sjors stacks sets.
Well, we have a very recursive set this week from Ed Fake for 12,837 sets saying Sjors stacks sets with a bunch of emojis.
You're not saying it right, Sjors. You gotta sing it. No, it's you're the one stacking sets. You gotta sing it. You gotta read it out loud, singing.
I don't sing.
Come on, Sjors. Everyone wants to hear this.
I don't sing.
All right. Well, do you want to tell our listeners how they can help you stack sets?
Yeah, they can use any of the Podcasting 2.0 apps that do this.
And it's called Boostagrams, right?
Yeah.
Okay, people can Google that. That was Sjors stacked sets. Ordinals. No, inscriptions. No, the witness discount. That's where we were.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. So also it's probably a good topic to cover in an episode at this point, because when this was the time this was discussed, by now, you know, it's been 7-8 years. Peter Weyle, to be exact, proposed SegWit, which included the discount, in December 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a couple of years of drama and block size wars and scaling, all of that. And it was all discussed to death for a while. But, and SegWit activated in 2017. So even that is almost 6 years ago by now. So there's probably a lot of people that weren't around back then.
That's right.
That know that there is a discount, but just weren't there at the time. And even for us, that's what I was saying when it was asked to me. I could sort of answer it, but to really sort of answer this question properly, you more than I, went back way into the archives and you watched some old presentations and tried to figure out what the reasoning was back then. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Okay, so before we get there, maybe we should first give a very brief recap of what SegWit is.
Yeah, I think so. We did a whole episode about it. SegWit has many different benefits, but the thing that we're focusing here on is that it was also a block size increase and that it created the distinction between... Well, it basically splits a transaction into two parts, the main transaction, so to speak, and the witness, which generally is the signature or stuff like a signature, like a hash pre-image, things like that.
Yeah.
And this, the thing that I guess people are asking about is that these witness data, these signatures, are discounted. So if you're, you know, if you're making a transaction that's 300 bytes, then you're paying more for the part of the transaction that is not the witness than you are for the part of the transaction that is the witness.
Yeah. Maybe the other thing to mention about SegWit is, I don't know if it was the main reason, but at least one of the big reasons was that it also made, it fixed the malleability bug, right? Well, we did an episode about this. We don't need to recap.
Yeah, I mean, that was the main point of it. It segregates the witness and this fixes malleability.
Yeah, I mean, was it the main point? I don't think it really matters at this point, but there were definitely two main reasons, right? Malleability for Lightning and then a block size limit increase that didn't require hard fork. And that is because of the discount.
Right, but I don't think that the idea of segregating the witness had nothing to do with increasing the block size. It's just that people realize that you could use it to increase the block size, which is kind of a nice bycatch.
Right.
And once you do realize that, you can start reasoning why the discount is roughly what it is.
Okay, so I think that's what we're getting into. I think the best way to get into it is just restate the question, and then you can take it from there. What do you think?
We can try that.
Sure. Why is there a witness discount?
Well, it's how you increase the box size.
Aha. But that's not the only reason, right? There's more to it.
Well, there's more going on.
You just mentioned you don't... Did you just mention this? You don't actually have to include a discount to increase the block size, right?
Yeah. So, okay. So the question is, if you just wanted to increase the block size, how would you do that? Well, the original idea was to do a hard fork where you simply increase the block size. So there's just, instead of buying five ice creams per block, now you can buy 10 ice creams per block.
You can make double the amount of transactions.
That's right.
Right. And hang on. So at this point, we're not even talking about the discount yet, right?
No, this is the very simple way to increase the box size is just a hard fork. That was known, but there were good reasons not to do a hard fork.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you were still in the hard fork park.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Let's get to SegWit then. Why was SegWit better other than it wasn't a hard fork? Or wasn't it?
Yeah, so SegWit was... So the idea of segregating a witness existed before the idea of the soft fork called SegWit, right? But the question is, but it turns out that you can use the soft fork SegWit to increase the block size. And the reason is because you are basically making transactions that to old nodes look like they don't have a signature. They're just giving away the money for free to anybody else who wants it. But new nodes will download essentially a separate block or a separate part of the block. Yeah, that's the witness block. And this could be as big as you want, in theory. Which means that you could...
Let's pause there for 1 second. So even by doing that, that would in itself be a block size increase in a way, right?
It could be a block size increase, really depending on how you do it. Because you can add an additional constraint. So if you just say that you can have as much witness data as you want... Yeah, right. Then it would be an infinite block size increase, essentially. But you could also say, well, you cannot add as much block size, as much stuff as you want. The total amount of data, so the total between the block and the witness still needs to be 1 megabyte, for example. So it could have been done without a block size increase.
Okay, I think this is a good point to explain what I meant by that. So the important part is that old nodes will only accept up to 1 megabyte of transaction data.
Yes.
A block must be 1 megabyte. Now, if you're moving part of the transaction, and I think a witness is a big part of the transaction, right? Isn't
Certainly,
it?
Yes.
It's around half or even more than half. It depends on the transaction, right? But it's...
Yeah, I think for a typical transaction, it was slightly less than half.
Yeah, maybe 40%. Yeah. So anyways, it's roughly half. So in that case, if we're assuming there's only going to be regular transactions, which is obviously a bad assumption, but let's make that bad assumption... then already you're almost doubling the amount of transactions that can be processed on the network just by separating the witness.
Yes.
Right? If you're not adding any additional constraints, because now the base part of the transaction can be up to 1 megabyte, all the base part of every transaction in the block, and then all the witnesses, which is almost half, is in a separate part. So already you've doubled it just by segregating the witness under a bad assumption and no... additional constraints, right?
Yes.
Okay, so maybe a logical next question is why wasn't this done, I guess? Why wasn't this just what segregated witnesses?
Well, the thing here is that the question is how big should that extra data be? Should there be a limit on it? And
yes.
If you make that a separate limit, so let's say you say the main stuff in the blockchain is 1 megabyte per block, and the witness, we're just going to pick a random number, maybe call it also 1 megabyte or 2 megabytes, whatever.
Yeah, let's just also say 1 megabyte, right?
Yeah.
That way it's a doubling.
Yeah, but if you do that in a naive way where you just say these are separate buckets, then you create a very difficult fee market. Because now in order to decide what goes into a block... the miner has to solve what's called a nonlinear equation, basically, where they have to decide how... basically, you have to compete for space in the main block, and you have to compete for space in the witness block, and those are completely separate markets. And that is mathematically a very hard problem to solve.
Yeah, I guess the problem, and correct me if I'm wrong, the problem would be that a transaction only includes one fee, but now all of a sudden there's kind of two markets, one for the base transactions and one for the witness. And so now the miner has to make some sort of calculation per transaction, whether to include it or not. And
it may turn out that there's lots of
buckets, and this gets very complicated very fast for miners to figure out what to include. Is that that's sort of right?
Yeah,
right?
And it also creates potential for abuse. So let's say the main part of the block is the most scarce, and so fees are quite high for that. But once you've paid for that, the witness part is really there's not much competition. So if you want to spam the witness part, that might be very cheap, and that creates all sorts of weird incentives.
Right. So this argument can be summed up as things get
complicated. You don't want to have your fee market based on more than one variable.
Right.
And actually, if we look at the modern world, that's not the case because we'll probably talked about this in earlier episodes. There's such a thing as transaction packages where you cannot look at the fee of one transaction. You have to look at the fee of a combination of transactions. So actually, the problem is already very hard.
And also what we mentioned in one of the previous episodes, like the sig hash limits should maybe be taken into account at this point.
That was already a factor that you had to take into your account. So your fee calculations get more difficult if you take the sig hash into account, which generally we just kind of don't.
Nevertheless, even though it's still more complicated than one variable, it would be worse if there were even more variables.
Well, there was some discussion on the mailing list that said, well, going from one to two variables is very, very bad. Going from two to three is probably not as bad. But I guess the hope was to really nail it to one variable and somehow find a way to deal with the sig hash limit and these things. So anyway, it's nice to have one fee rate.
Okay, so this... Okay, so go on. So it's nice to have... One fee rate. What does this mean?
Well, that means that there has to be one limit. Mm-hmm. And right now, as we discussed it, the simple way would be to have two limits. So how do you turn two limits into one limit? That's essentially what was done. And the solution to that is this thing called virtual bytes, where you say, we're not actually counting the real bytes anymore. We're making this thing called a virtual byte. And the simplest way to do that might be to say, one byte in the main block counts as one virtual byte, and one byte in the witness counts as one virtual byte. So really, one byte is one byte. But we are going to limit the total number of bytes to 1 million. So 1 megabyte. So this means that you can have as many witness bytes as you want or as many main bytes as you want, but the total has to be 1 million. So now you have one limit.
Okay. Well, the example you just gave would not be a block size increase then, right?
Exactly. That would be no block size increase.
Right.
If you wanted to do your 2 megabyte example, then you would have to make the limit 2 megabyte. So you would say, but that's not possible, right? Naively. Because we just said the total limit has to be 2, but you can't have the main block be more than 1.
Right.
So that's not possible, naively. So the only
reason it's not possible to make that very clear is it wouldn't be backwards compatible.
Exactly.
Old nodes would now see 2 megabyte blocks and reject them while new nodes would be fine with them. So that's the reason you're saying it's not possible.
So first we split the witness out from the main data. Then we're like, oh, that gives us a lot of extra space. But oh my God, now we have this super complicated fee market that nobody can reason about. Let's bring back the limit of 1 megabyte for the total amount. So now we don't have a block size increase anymore. What do we do? And this is where the witness discount comes in.
Well, or you're missing one step, or we can increase it, but then it wouldn't be backwards compatible.
That'd be a hard fork.
So this is where the discount comes in. Okay, so how does the discount actually work? Maybe that's a good next question.
Yeah, so what the discount does, it's more like you could also see it as a tax on the old stuff. It's basically saying every part of the old chain is every part of the main part of the transaction, which means all the outputs and all the sort of stuff in the middle of a transaction counts as 4, and all the witness stuff counts as 1. And then we say the total is, in this way of counting, is 4 million. And so what that means is if you only use old stuff, every byte counts as 4. So if you only use, basically you don't use SegWit at all, your block gets to be 1 megabyte, and then you hit this 4 weight limit.
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing here because, again, when we say we're going to make the new limit 4,
But you can also do it the other way around. You can say, well, we'll count the main parts as 1. So 1 megabyte of main stuff is 1 megabyte block in total. And we're going to count everything in the witness, we're going to count that as 0.25. So that's maybe easier to think about.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's an easier way to understand it, and it's kind of equivalent.
And this is the difference between weight units and virtual bytes. So this last thing we talked about are virtual bytes. So we say one virtual byte in the main part of the block or in the main part of the transaction is just one byte. but one byte in the witness part counts as 0.25 virtual bytes.
Right. So now there's a block being mined with, just 1 megabyte of old transaction styles. So now both new and old nodes will just see 1 megabyte. It's fine.
Yep.
And the alternative is, okay, so the other extreme would be there's going to be 4 megabytes of
witness
stuff, and then new nodes are going to discount this 0.25. So now they're seeing 1 megabyte again. So that's within their limit, as we're talking about weight limits.
Yep.
And then older nodes are just going to see nothing, essentially. They're going to see an empty block because everything is in the witness.
Precisely.
So an empty block is also within the 1 megabyte limit. So now both nodes are okay.
Yep, exactly.
So, okay, so basically what we've said now, this argument sounds a lot like it is kind of an accounting trick. We just want to make sure we have a block size increase while we don't create different fee markets, because that gets very complicated.
Right, so I would tend to separate it in three concerns that we need to deal with. One is that you want to have one market, despite having this separate witness. The other is that we wanted to have a block size increase somehow. And the third is then the way you do that is by having this discount in the witness data. But you could kind of do these things separately. So we could have separated the witness, but kept the block size the same. And we could have increased the block size without SegWit, I guess. But if you wanted to increase the block size and have SegWit, then the only way to do that is with this witness discount. Now, the exact number is somewhat arbitrary. Okay. Well, we can defend that number, but that will be the next phase.
Yo, what is going on, guys? We are proud to have Voltage as a sponsor of this episode. How many of you developers out there have wanted a streamlined infrastructure provider for your particular project? Well, I'll tell you what. Voltage is the Bitcoin infrastructure provider you have been looking for that makes building on Bitcoin quick and easy, whether it's Bitcoin nodes, Lightning nodes, BTC Pay, and so much more. But don't take it from me. Just ask the guys over at Amboss, Sphinx, Podcast Index, and Thunder Games, and so many others that you guys already know and love. Their enterprise-grade products make it fast and easy to build, deploy, and scale your next project. So make it easy on yourself. Even normie plebs can use the dashboard or API. Don't wait before the next block confirmation. Let your team focus on building great products and let Voltage handle all the rest. Voltage is your go-to zero management Bitcoin infrastructure solution.
Now we've explained why you really need to have a discount.
Yeah. Okay. So we can defend the number. Before we get to defending the number, I think there's also an argument, or at least there was an argument, a more technical argument for giving a discount. It would better align incentives of the Bitcoin system. Is that right?
Yeah. And there's kind of two ways to look at those incentives. We're talking about the UTXO set, essentially. So this is the set that you're kind of keeping either in memory, or at least you very often need to read it, which is the list of who owns which coin. And by using this discount mechanism, that list tends to not grow a lot. And there's two ways to look at that. One is we're saying, I guess the more abstract way is to say, the block size is increasing, but the only part that is increasing is the witness. And the witness does not go into the UTXO set, ever. You check the witness, but you don't put it in the UTXO set. So by only increasing the witness size, you are increasing the block size without increasing the UTXO set. The other way to look at it is more from an individual transaction point of view, where before SegWit, it was much more expensive to spend an input than to create an output for a very basic transaction.
Wait, can you repeat that for me?
Before SegWit, it was more expensive to spend an input than to create a new output. And the reason is because when you're spending an input, you need to put on the blockchain, usually a public key and a signature, because you're trying to prove that you have the hash. And so that's about 90 bytes, roughly. Whereas to create a new output is basically just 20 bytes, because you only need to put the hash of a thing on there. Well, at least it's 20 bytes more than a few other things. You also have to put the amount on the chain, etc. That doesn't change. So SegWit changes this because of the discount, changes this math.
Well, does it though? Because you just said it's 90 versus 20. 90 for an input, 20 for an output.
Yeah, and so the input now gets a 4x discount.
Yes.
So right. That makes it, you know, it's still slightly more expensive.
It's only the witness, right? That gets and there's more to the input, I would assume.
Why? Yes, exactly. So it doesn't work exactly like this because the input also has to point to the previous transaction that takes up space.
Right.
And that doesn't get a discount.
Right.
But at least it makes it significantly less expensive to spend an input than it used to be.
Okay, so it's about equal now? Creating an input is about as expensive as creating an output?
I mean, it still depends on which kind of input and which kind of output. I think it's still slightly more expensive to spend it.
Okay.
Slightly more expensive to spend it, but at least the difference isn't as big anymore.
Okay, and what is the practical benefit of this? So
I read, I think it was the Stack Overflow or Reddit somewhere, where somebody gave a nice example of, like, you have a wallet and has 3 coins in it. It has a 0.25, a 0.5, and a 1 BTC coin in it. And you want to spend 0.75. So anybody who's very good at math can see there's 2 ways to do that. You can combine your 0.25 and your 0.5 coin. That's 0.75. Or
very good.
You can use your 1 BTC coin and you get 0.25 and change. Those are your 2 options.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old situation, because it is so expensive to spend an input, you would be better off taking your 1 BTC coin and then just creating the change address rather than spending those 2 coins.
Right. So then, then you have 3 UTXOs still.
Yes. And so
the UTXO that's being spent to the ice cream seller.
Well, that's not your problem.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is part of my confusion then.
The incentive for you in the old days...
We're really talking about individual incentives here.
Yeah. So in the old days, for you as the sender, it was more it was better to just take your 1 BTC coin and get some change back. Because the change that you have to create is only 22 bytes, at least the part that, you know, you're actually... Or 20 bytes, sorry. The part that you're actually putting... That you have some control over. Whereas if you had to spend that old coin, you had to use these 90 bytes. So these 90 bytes, if you wanted to add those 2 coins. You have to spend at least 1 coin, right? So the difference is, do you spend an extra coin and make change and don't have change? Or do you not do that and only have change? And so that the difference is 90 versus 20. So the difference is roughly 70 bytes.
Yeah, but hang on.
And with Segwit, the difference is much smaller.
Sure, I'm confused.
Okay.
You're saying this is in my individual benefits. But who cares about my individual benefit? Isn't the goal
you
to...
Do.
Yes, but why do Bitcoin developers? Because wasn't the goal to reduce the UTXO set?
Yeah, exactly. So it would be nice if the incentives are such that you prefer to spend your coins, which i.e. you reduce the size of the UTXO set. It should be in your interest to do that.
Yes.
And it wasn't. Because in this example we just made, it was much cheaper for you to not spend the small change that you had in your wallet, but rather just fragment it further and further and further and further. And so maybe in the long run that changes, of course, because eventually you'll have to spend it.
Would this only hold up if you can add up your UTXOs to make a payment in such a way that there's no change address?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Okay. So in the cases where you can add up UTXOs to prevent getting a change address, in these cases it's better to have the discount because you're incentivized to actually do that rather than to take one big chunk of coin and get a change address and only have one input. I think that makes sense. That sounds about right to me.
And of course it is always more complicated because you have to think about what's the future fee rate going to be. So I've created all these change outputs, but now you're stuck with them. So eventually maybe you still want to consolidate them. And if you expect fees to go up in the future, it may still be in your interest to make sure you don't have too many small coins because it's going to make your life harder in the end.
Yep. Okay. So this is the argument for why it's better aligns incentives with the greater Bitcoin protocol, essentially, right?
Yeah.
With the Bitcoin system. Was this the only argument in that direction, or was there something else?
Yeah, well, the other was basically... Well, I guess that gets us to why the 4x would be good. I think.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Why 4x and why not 2x or 8x or 500x?
Yeah, so first of all, the number was... I don't think it was calculated with any precision, with any kind of algorithm. It was sort of a guesstimate. And then it's useful to understand that software developers like powers of two. So they like the number one, they like the number two, they like the number four, they like the number 8, 16, 32, etc.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like numbers like 3 and 5. So really, the you know, why is it 4? Why is it not 2? Why is it not 8? Should be your question. And then you... Now basically, the analysis is kind of like this. The part that you're making more difficult is the signature validation. So you're adding 4 times as much signature stuff, potentially, because you're giving it a discount. And it turned out that recently, it became about 5 to 7 times easier to verify those signatures.
Well, when you say recently, you mean recently before SegWit was introduced.
That's right. Yeah. Because we did another episode a long time ago called Elipsec P256K1, where we explained this library that essentially is purpose-built for Bitcoin that just validates signatures and a few other things. And that library was made about, like I said, it was about 5 or 7 times faster. So knowing that you can verify, 5 times more signatures per second means that it's kind of okay if there are 5 times more signatures, at least from the point of view of your CPU. So if you look at computer science in general, there's kind of different bottlenecks. One of your bottlenecks is your CPU, the other is your RAM, the other is your download, and the other is maybe your disk storage. And so here the idea was, we can probably reasonably safely increase this by 4 because, it doesn't make it much worse.
And that was because the library was updated, is what you were saying. Yeah. The other thing I do remember, I don't know how big of a factor that was really for the developers, but I think it was Jonathan Toomim, who was a Bitcoin, one of the forks, Bitcoin Classic developer, I think. And he did some testnet testing, and I think he also found that 4 megabytes broadcasts over the network reasonably fast enough, and it kind of slows down if it gets bigger than that.
Yeah, and so this gets to the analysis of all these different bottlenecks, right? So one bottleneck we talked about CPU, the other might be how fast blocks propagate, and that tends to be a function of bandwidth. But the good news there is that there were ways already in development and already partially deployed that make it easier to transmit fairly big blocks fairly quickly. I think we haven't done an episode on compact blocks yet, but maybe one day we will. But basically, the idea is you anticipate what the next block is going to be, and then you only get the header and a few missing transactions. So then it doesn't matter that these blocks are very large. Because if block propagation gets too slow, then you get too many orphan blocks, etc.
Do we have compact blocks in Bitcoin now?
Yeah, we've had them for a long time.
Right, okay. So,
in fact, I think it was done around the same time because it was one of these ways to mitigate this risk of increasing the bandwidth. And then I think the other bottleneck, I think there is a bottleneck storage, but for that there was already a solution called pruning. So that really leaves two. One is to keep up with the blockchain. That is not solved with SegWit, makes it 4 times worse, right? Or 2 to 4 times worse. You have to just, when you're keeping up, you just have to download more because you have to check everything.
But keeping up also means validating the signatures, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that became 4 times worse.
Except that the crypto library was updated to handle it faster.
So your CPU is fine with it, but you still have to download it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So that's the problem. But the good news there was if you look at, say, SPV wallets or Lite clients or mobile wallets, typically what they would do is they would not actually verify all the things. And so the stuff they still have to download, because they're not doing complete validation anyway, the stuff they have to download does not go up at all. Because they don't have to download any of the witness data anyway. So the idea was there, okay, their life is not getting any worse for the Lite wallets. Of course, Lite wallets have their downsides, but at least their life doesn't get any worse. Then another constraint is if you are a new node and you need to download the entire history of the Bitcoin blockchain, how does that change? And there, I think the easiest use case to look at, if you're trying to download the whole blockchain and have an archive, then that just got 4 times worse, right? But if you are a little bit more conservative on how many resources you have, you may want to be pruning. And if you're pruning anyway, then as recently people started to actually implement this, then you can actually just not download the witness data. And if you don't download the witness data for the first part of the blockchain, well, then your blocks are essentially just as big as they used to be. there is no block size increase for the history. There's only a block size increase for the present, but there's no block size increase for the history.
So I remember this argument from back in the days, but I was also under the impression that this argument was kind of dropped. And there's probably a couple of reasons for that, but the first one I can think of is, well, you can do that anyways, right? With or without putting the signatures in the witness. You can always just decide not to validate or download the signatures, or at least it's technically possible.
No, you cannot, because the problem is in the old system, the signatures are really stuck inside the block in a way that you cannot take it out safely. Because in order to see if a block is what it says it should be, you're checking the header of a block. And if the header of the block basically says what's in the block, and if you're not downloading the signatures, you can't check whether that's any of that is true. So that's pretty unsafe.
Right. Okay. So in that, okay. So witness, segregated witness does actually make, what do we call it, assume valid, more plausible.
Yeah, it makes it more practical to, because assume valid, what it does so far, we talked about that in an earlier episode, assume valid simply downloads all the signatures but just ignores them.
Mm.
But with this change, assume valid could actually not download all the signatures.
Right.
The downside then is, of course, you do not have an archive of the blockchain. So I guess the practical utility for that was somewhat limited in recent history, so nobody's actually implemented that. The only use case for this is if you plan to prune it anyway. So if you plan to prune all the blocks after you've verified them, there really is no point in downloading the witness data and then deleting it.
Okay, that would be the difference. It would save on downloads.
Yeah, and so for those users, the contrast with a regular hard fork becomes very clear, I think. So if your goal is to just download it and then prune it, you don't have to download the witness data. So your blocks for you, there is no block size increase from your perspective. But if there had been a hard fork doubling the block size, you would have to download all of that stuff because the amount of data would have doubled.
Right. Okay. Taking one small step back. So I think it's fair to say that the 4 megabyte limit was sort of picked to deal with worst case scenarios, right?
Yeah, you don't want it to be too high.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, some of the examples you called might have been the case. And also it was picked to be pretty close to what they knew was improved, because they knew the 5 to 7x thing in the CPU performance was there. And then it happens to work out quite nicely that it creates a little bit of a better balance between spending and changing coins. But whether that was really part of the calculation, I'm not so sure.
Right. Is there anything else you want to say about...
And of course, the number 4 will actually give you a decent block size increase, right? So if you look at what happens if you just create the same type of transaction, so you're still doing, I don't know, 2 inputs, 2 outputs, that gives you, I think, about a 75% increase in the block size, effectively, if everybody used SegWit, so you get 1.75. Whereas if you'd only done a factor 2 discount, maybe you would only get 1.25 megabyte block. So you want to actually make a dent in the block size without it being too crazy. The number 4 makes a lot more sense than the number 2. But the next number 8, it gets a little bit scary because it's not that easy to justify that increase.
Yeah. Another thing I remember from back in those days... So one of the very few, if not only, sort of valid criticism on SegWit at that time, in my opinion anyways, was that the real block size increase that you gain from it is about double, like you just said,
mm-hmm.
while the worst case block size increase that you get is 4 megabytes. So mm-hmm. an attacker could sort of do worse than honest users.
Yes.
That was an argument against SegWit at the time, which I found was very of the very few, like I said, one of the few, if not only, valid arguments.
But then,
and we are
as opposed to doing what? I mean, obviously, it's better to not increase the block size from that point of view. But what was the alternative that they would propose in that
hard
case?
Hard fork. These were the people that wanted hard fork.
So you could say that, but we just went through all these other bottlenecks. And basically, the number 4, so 4x worst case was acceptable for most of these scenarios.
Yes, so but it would still be nice, so to say.
Whereas a straight hard fork would actually make things worse for a lot of these scenarios. So for the scenario, for example, the prune node that we talked about, the prune node that for the first time catches up to the blockchain. If you do a 2x increase, then yes, 2x is the worst case, but 2x is also the best case because that Prune node now has to download twice as much stuff to verify the blocks. Whereas with SegWit, in the good case, they don't have to download more data. And in the worst case, they also don't have to download more data because all that witness stuff is just can be completely ignored.
Well, so let me rephrase the question, see if we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, you're comparing a straight hard fork, a straight 2x hard fork, to
SegWit,
right?
Be more specific. So what, for example, Gavin Andreessen back in these days, I think fairly shortly after the SegWit presentation by Peter Wuyle, someone asked him for his opinion or he weighed in on a mailing list or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he liked SegWit, but he would like to see it as a hard fork. So then you still get the witness separate and the transactions. It's basically all the same. However, it's done as a hard fork. And then you can, for example, do 4 megabytes. So now you can have 4 megabytes of both regular data or worst case. So now the worst case and the best case is the same. Is that what you were also saying?
I'm not sure if the hard fork makes any difference for this economic side of it. It might.
I'm also...
Because you still need to have one metric, otherwise you have a problem. Yeah. But because you don't have to be backwards compatible, yes, you can simply say that the total of the witness and the normal data has to be 2 megabytes.
Right.
And this time you don't care what the old nodes think about that. Well, but then if you wanted to talk about the worst case safety, which you are, I think, then you want to look at the 2x variant, right? So you get...
We just established that the network, at least back then, that people reasoned 4MB would be...
Yeah, but
worst case, right?
The criticism you were formulating was that there was a good case and a bad case. And the good case was 2 megabytes, and the bad case was 4 megabytes by the abuser, basically.
Yeah, which is how SegWit is designed now.
Yes.
Yes.
So then what do you want to compare that with? If you compare that to a normal 4x increase, then you're basically saying, let's just build the worst case. Whereas if you're comparing it...
Even the worst case can be fine, but it's nice if the good case is the same as the worst case,
yeah,
right?
That exactly.
An attacker doesn't have a benefit,
yeah.
So to say.
Exactly. So if the good case is the same as the worst case, either for 2MB or 4MB, then that's only interesting for the person who is downloading the full blockchain archive. Because in the other scenarios where somebody is downloading a Prune version, it's actually better to have SegWit because they can safely ignore 3 out of those 4 megabytes.
Let's pull this conversation to the present day because mm-hmm. that's where I was sort of heading at.
Okay, so now you have these actual 4 megabyte blocks and
yes.
People are saying, oh, if we hadn't had this discount,
exactly.
This wouldn't have happened.
Right, yes. So is that, well, that sounds like
well,
a...
Well, I think if we had done a 4x hard fork, then this would have happened, right? We simply would have all the space for it.
Yeah, but then the inscriptions wouldn't have a cost benefit against regular transactions. And I think mm-hmm. that's for me at least the one... valid or the one criticism of sort of the inscriptions haters that I agree with. Like it doesn't really feel right that inscriptions are cheaper byte for byte versus regular transactions. It would be nice if that wasn't the case.
Well, I'm not sure if that's true because we talked about one of the reasons why it's good to discount witness data, which is that it does not go into the UTXO set.
Right. Okay. So that's, this is exactly what I was going to ask you, I guess. So yeah, go on. I shouldn't have interrupted you.
So I think it is actually good to discount witness data, regardless of whether you use a soft fork or a hard fork, for that reason, because you want to incentivize people not shoving stuff into the UTXO set.
And hang on. If you're creating an inscription, you're also not using up UTXOs, right? It's just, it's a wash. You have one, you still have one, basically.
Yeah, so you're not, inscriptions don't pollute the UTXO set at all.
I mean, except that each inscription does probably create one UTXO in the form of an ordinal.
Sure. But just one. Like, they're not big UTXOs. Right? If there was no discount for doing that, you might as well just create a giant UTXO, perhaps.
Okay. If there was no discount...
Then there's no reason to not say, I'm just going to make an So there's UpReturn, right? UpReturn mm-hmm. creates giant UTXOs, but we say, well, they're unspendable, so we ignore those UTXOs. That was kind of the fix for getting an infinitely large UTXO set. Because let's say there was a world where up return-ish things existed, but they could not be removed. So people would be putting their pictures the blockchain right into the UTXO set.
Yeah, I don't want that. But however...
But now...
Okay.
Now people are doing that using up return, but...
No, they're not. Well, you're not referring to inscriptions.
Let's say there is no discount, then they would probably be doing it using up return. Now, you know, this 80-byte limit on up return is just in a mempool, so they would probably lobby for, you know, just increase those mempool limits or to send it straight to a miner. But there still wouldn't be anything bad. But that's only because they're using up return and not using something else. Because what if they go full, say, Mike in space and say, hey, wait a minute, these UTXO set can still get pruned. What if we just create a not really up return? We change it slightly so that it's really... The blockchain doesn't know that it's unspendable. And we still pay the same fee because whether you use up return or put actual spam in the UTXO set, there's no price difference. So you could do op, not really return, and then put 4 megabytes in a transaction. And now you've got this 4 megabytes sitting in the UTXO set. So that's pretty bad. So in that sense, it's good that that the way inscriptions do it is 4 times cheaper because they're putting their spam... They have a 4x incentive to put their spam in a place where it does not blow up the UTXO set.
Okay, let me rephrase the question then. And okay, what if we removed the up return limit or the up return limit was never there?
Well, it's not really there, right? So let's...
It's not there? Oh, you mean because it's a policy rule?
It's just a policy rule. So anybody can run a node that has no up return limit. And in fact, there are some pull requests that suggest like, hey, just drop the up return limit.
Yeah. Which I agree with, I think. Mm. But that's a side quest. Or maybe it's not. I guess this is actually my question. So do you think the motivations for SegWit and the discount hold up for inscriptions versus if the up return would have no limits? Like, would it still be beneficial? Would we still want to incentivize people putting it in the witness rather than up return?
No, I would imagine that that doesn't make a difference. I guess what I'm worried about is the op not really return scenario.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, that's Mike in space doing Mike in space. That's a completely different story, right? If the op return is just op return and there is no limit, then you're saying then it doesn't matter whether it's in the witness or in the op return.
Yeah, if the choice is between op return and the witness and there was no discount, then it didn't matter.
Right, but... Okay.
Also not for the health
but
of the
there
blockchain.
Is a, yeah, but there is a discount. So wouldn't it be better if... I'm getting lost in my own argument. No, I think I'm still following myself. Wouldn't it be fairer if there was no discount and now that was either the up return or the witness? Instead of now definitely people are going to use the witness with a discount, which means that inscriptions are cheaper than transactions. Are you still following me?
Yeah, no, that's...
I'm not sure anymore.
I don't think that's good. And now we're talking about just the case of I'm downloading the old blockchain. So I'm a prune node and I arrived to Bitcoin for the first time. Now I'm downloading the old blockchain. And in your no discount scenario, where somehow we increase the block size to 4 megabytes as a hard fork, I'm now downloading 4 megabyte blocks. Whereas in the current world, I can download
with
1 megabyte
real
block.
Transactions.
Yeah, because these up return transactions, you do have to download them. You can't skip that part. With the ordinals, I can skip it if I'm a new node catching up. So there is a benefit
Why couldn't you skip up returns?
Because
that would be easy as
in
well,
order
right?
to check what is in a block, you need to have everything to check
that's
the hash,
right.
basically.
Yeah, you already said that. You're right.
Otherwise, I think you could have a scenario where somebody would give you the header of a block, and the header would have the proof of work, and you'd be like, yeah, this is a great block. It has all the proof of work. And then they give you the contents of the block, and they'd say, yeah, trust me, this belongs to that header. And that doesn't work unless you completely restructure the block internally so that you can have like Merkle trees of parts of the block. But that's really what SegWit does. It just essentially puts some of the stuff on somewhere else.
Okay, so you support... the witness discount, even today, with today's knowledge that people are using it to upload big bots.
I support it in the sense that, given that we increased the block size to 4 megabytes, worst case, or even if we had only increased it to 2 megabytes, this is a better way to do it.
You still think that the incentives work out? This is how the incentives are supposed to be used.
I mean, the alternative was either we stick to 1 megabyte, so we have SegWit, but it's a 1 megabyte limit. Then it doesn't matter. You don't need a discount. But if we do want to increase the block size, then it's nice that, all that extra stuff goes to a safe place. Yeah. So I still think that's the right call.
Okay. I'm going to think about this. And I hope at least...
Of course, we didn't know that.
At least three listeners could keep up with the last 5 minutes of rambling. Sure, is there anything else we need to discuss which we haven't yet? About the discount, about the witness discount. Or did that wrap it up more or less?
No, I think we've got it all. There's some good videos that you can watch, I guess. But some of this is really a matter of, reconstructing. I think if you look at the mailing list pulse from that time, they did not go into as much... I think they didn't go as much into as much depth as we just did.
Yeah, definitely.
So it seems to me that some of these decisions were correct. For example, the idea of having a single metric. But if you read the SegWitBIP, and especially the original version of the SegWitBIP, it doesn't even explain... I think it doesn't even explain this need to have a single market.
That was my impression as well. At least, I mean, I wasn't in every conversation, especially not, you know, they were probably...
Now, it is said in the presentation that SIPA gave, I think either in Hong Kong or the follow-up a few days later in San Francisco, where he does explicitly point out this problem of having one market, and there's some discussion about it on the mailing list. But I think nowadays, maybe you'd want to have a bit more elaboration on that in the BIP, because for all you know, somebody comes along with a similar idea and just implements it incorrectly, forgets about this fee market problem. Now we have this we could have had SegWit with a double... super complicated fee market, and it would have been very difficult to fix it if we didn't have somebody smart enough to do it correctly in the first place.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my impression at the time was that 4 megabyte was picked because people wanted the block size increase, and 4 megabyte seemed about right. And then over time, as the debate was very heated, sort of the arguments really only started to crystallize. That was my impression, but maybe, you know, as you mentioned, there was probably some thought even before I...
Probably, but of course, we don't know that. What was happening. We don't know everything that was happening before these presentations were given, right?
Right.
But the heat around the block size wars was started in 2015 or so, whereas this proposal was at the end of 2015.
But it continued, and then people started attacking SegWit for all kinds of weird reasons from all directions. So
yeah, and I guess part of that might be because, you know, wasn't some of these things that we just talked about today were not as clearly available. Like, you could find out if you watched the technical presentations and went all the way to the Q&A and went into the mailing list discussions, but there was no Bitcoin Explained podcast at the time.
True.
Summing up these reasons in a super clear way. And that is why we thank you for listening to Bitcoin
Explained.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee. A city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analyst Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.